3, 2, 1.
Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
Listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
It is 8 o'clock. It's Thursday. This is LA Talk Radio, and you are listening to The Writer's Block. I am your host, Jim Christina, in studio tonight, finally, with Bobby Jean Bell, who was out sick last week. She abandoned me in my post.
And you did such a wonderful job without
and
me.
Johnny Boggs and I had a ball.
You did. It was a great show.
We had a good time. We really, truly did. What's on your show next week in the concert series?
You know, we're so excited. Next week, February 25th, a week from tonight, is LA's premier Western swing with a jazzy style cowbop will be performing at the Rep Theater, part of the SCV TV Presents the Out West Concert Series. Bruce Foreman and Pinto Pammy and the crew, and we couldn't be more delighted.
Oh, good.
So if you want tickets, 661-255-7087. Say you heard it on the Writer's Block, and we'll give you a discount.
Heavy sigh. I'm here.
I know. You can watch it. It'll be filmed.
Oh, okay. I'd like to tell you that the Writer's Block is brought to you by Black Dog Publishing in Simi Valley, by Out West Boutique and Cultural Center in New Hall, and by Target Freight Management.
We mention Target Freight Management every show. And we mention that they have a full truckload service that's the best in the industry. But have we mentioned that TFM Truckload gets your freight there every time? No time, on time, no muss, no fuss, at the rates you need for your transportation bottom line? Call today at 1-844-653-7789. Write that down, 1-844-653-7789, and tell them you heard it on The Writer's Block. And they'll have a little something extra just for you. And you know what? While we're at it, if you are an LTL shipper, you are probably looking for the best rates at the lowest hassle possible. Call Target Freight Management. Their customized transportation management system is just the ticket to getting your freight moved your way. Call Target Freight Management today at 1-888-653-1323. Or go to www.targetfmi.com on the web. Call today. You won't be sorry that you did.
Yay!
We love them.
Good job, Bobby Jean.
Is this the Grammys? Wait.
Yeah, well, no, that was last Monday.
Oh, I got confused for a minute there.
We don't have Kanye West with us tonight. But we do have a really cool lady, and I'm going to have Bobby introduce her here because she's quite the special lady. And Bobby, you want to take that away?
Absolutely. Our guest tonight is author Susan Chirico, who is also an experienced spiritual life coach, Emmy-nominated line producer and television executive of Home and Family on the popular Hallmark Channel. In her spare time, she happily resides on a 5-acre frontier ranch in Agua Dulce, California, that she and her husband, Peter, who has been a guest on our show also, built after a landslide destroyed their home. Susan relishes the basic pleasures of life, enjoying her family, the views from her ranch and gardens, and the companionship of her animals. And tonight we're going to be chatting about her new book, which I could not put down, Rainbows Over Ruins. Please welcome Susan Chirico.
Susan.
Well, hello there.
Well, hello there. Welcome to the Writer's Block.
Well, thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
Well,
you're just around the corner.
Yes, you are. That's why I'm kind of surprised you're not sitting in here with us.
There you go.
Well, welcome, Susan. You know, when I read your book, and it's, you know how you highlight a book when you go through and you highlight because you don't want to miss anything. I think my book is entirely yellow. I don't think I have any unhighlighted sections. So you've been on a fascinating journey, and it all started with a landslide. Can you kind of tell us a little bit about that and how this all got started for you?
Well, yes, of course. We had, you know, it's a story I tell a great deal, and I have to say it means a great deal to me. It was one of those funny days where you leave from home. It's a beautiful day, or at least it's gray, raining, but you're not expecting anything unusual to happen to your day. And instead, when I came home, I found my house filled with mud. The dogs, as I opened the front door, I couldn't tell as I walked up that anything had happened. But as I opened the front door, there was mud everywhere through my house, and my dogs were sitting on the sofa, wagging their tails, going, "Hi, Mom, we're really glad you're home." But it was not at all funny in reality. What had happened was that the house had been built into a mountain. The mountain let go, and it came right through the house. And the rocks piled up from the ground behind the house right up to the roof. So it was very surreal. We, you know, no one knew if the house was going to suddenly give way and collapse. But in the meantime, all the power worked, all the utilities worked. It just was a mess. So we went into this process of rebuilding our lives. And it probably took, with all the economic things you have to do, I mean, we still had to pay our mortgage and our homeowner's insurance. Because even though we couldn't live in the house at that point, somebody else might fall, you know, a trip and fall thing. Mm-hmm. So huge expenses, insurance you had to keep paying. And we probably lived with friends for about 6 weeks until we found a place to rent. And then it was another year and a half before we could get our own place. And it was a time of really being in fear because we didn't know what to do. There were no books. There are no guidelines. The government was not helpful. And so that's when I got the first kernel of an idea that ultimately became the book.
So when this happens, you walk in your front door, your house is full of mud. You have boulders up against your wall. Is it going to come down? I don't know. Let's move everything out. Is that the point where you stand there with your hands on your hips and you start crying?
Well, yes, but it's very interesting. Neither Peter nor I are that kind of person. He wasn't home, by the way. He was on one of those crazy trips out to Winter Range.
Out to Arizona.
In Arizona.
Yeah.
So he wasn't anywhere to be found, and I'm trying to find, you know, I can't, I'm trying to find a phone that I can reach out to him and tell him what's happened, and he answers the phone, and it's like, well, don't worry about it, it'll be okay. I said, no, you have to come home right now. No, it's okay, honey, you can almost see him patting me on the head, you know, like, you'll be fine, don't worry about it, and then one of those rare moments, you go, no, you have to come home right now. there was just no, I didn't know who to call. I didn't know what to do. And finally, I called the church, mm-hmm. and the church came out to help me. But when he got home, which is probably another 4 or 5 hours, because he turned around and drove back from Arizona, he calmly plugged the TV set in so he could watch TV.
Western Channel.
He got right to Hoppy, didn't he?
Well, we could figure this out.
Yeah.
And fortunately, someone called us at that point, and it was a producer looking to meet with Peter to do a project with him.
Amazing.
And we made a decision right then not to cry. Mm-hmm. But to do what we needed to do to move forward, mm-hmm. because it really, there was, you know, we couldn't fix anything in that moment. All we could do was go forward.
Susan, your book, again, Rainbows Over Ruins, and of course ruins is, I think you're referring to the landslide. For all of us in our lives, as we read your book, we might substitute some other heart life-changing disaster for ruin. You give us really great, inspirational, not fluff, really gold nuggets of how to take that ruin and change it in your life. And one of the things that you said yourself, I think this was in notes from you, is that that one of the outcomes was that you began to ask yourself if it was time to follow a dream that you had for several years, but had remained unpursued. And that after effect of a disaster is to start your to ask yourself, if not now, when? And I think so often disasters seem to be finally the door slammed on us that we have a dream. We've been working with it long enough that we have thrown it out there sort of to the universe, and we haven't listened to the opportunities that have come our way, maybe. And so finally, something has to happen that says, that's it. I'm kicking you out of here.
It's true. It's true. It's something I find it happens with people who have serious illnesses. They have the sudden epiphany when they find they're going to live, and they begin to approach life from a totally different direction. It may be their calling, but they definitely take it with gusto. And that's exactly what happened to me. I had to find a way to pursue the dream that I'd always wanted to have.
And can you tell us a little bit more about the specifics of that dream and kind of how you began to move toward it?
Well, I'll tell you, it's funny how dreams happen. I started to have my dream probably 15 years before this landslide happened. And it was a joke. I felt like it was so impossible to achieve that I would just laugh. I would keep it as my, you know, my piece of humor in my back pocket. But I had said I wanted to have a retreat center. And after the landslide, I thought, okay, now's the time. I'll do it. But I wasn't ready yet either. I hadn't formed it enough in my mind. I hadn't healed myself enough. I hadn't developed all the essentials of information and skills that I felt necessary to move forward. And finally, I realized, after I wrote the book, very interesting, a shift happened. I had accomplished something utilizing principles that allowed me to achieve a dream. And I said, okay, now I'm ready. And I began to define it more clearly, that I want to build a retreat and conference center that is dedicated to the incubation of other people's dreams. And it's a space where participants can take courses and workshops, where they can clarify their visions and develop the plans they're going to follow, and then start taking those action steps that actually move them toward their goals. So that's where my dream has been. And then I began to lay out a plan backwards from, this is what I want it to look like. And I have such beautiful pictures of it. I found a place up in Green Valley that had the perfect building. It's part of a big center. It's another center like this, and one that would not be, you know, would not necessarily resonate with the work I'm doing, but the building does. And so I have it on my vision board, and I look at it every day. And I have it in I know that I'm moving toward it by the things I've got on this list, going backwards until I come to right where I am right now. And for me, it has to do with the word space, because I had inner space. And then I began to realize that we've now created cyberspace. And that means online. You can have a center online where you can do exactly the same kind of things that I'm envisioning. And so I began to work toward having a school online, which will progress as it will, and it will take me toward the center that I'd like to have in a physical reality.
Well, I'd like to also mention that if anyone wants to call and talk to Susan tonight, the number is 818-602-4929. Number again is 818-602-4929. Now, Susan, before you sat down and started writing this book, you had already been involved somewhat in a spiritual sense with...
Oh, yes.
Okay. Can you kind of go into that a little bit?
Well, I have to think that I've been involved in spiritual studies since I was in my early 20s, and that's a bit ago. Mm. I studied anthroposophy, which is an organization founded by Rudolf Steiner. I had been a member of the Gnostic tradition and actually ordained as a deacon within that tradition. I had studied some metaphysical work, and I was really on a path of spirituality, as well as, you know, this combination, I want to say this melding of a fairly classic Christian background. And I studied that for years, just absolutely years, so that I was ready to delve off into this. When the landslide happened, I was ready to take spiritual life coaching, mm-hmm. which was the natural progression for me. Mm-hmm. And that has taken me into all manner of new concepts from quantum. It's really tied into quantum physics, ironically, mm-hmm. or quantum consciousness. And the expansive mental state in which we can find ourselves.
I'm nodding yes, and I have no idea what you're talking about.
Well, I thought that was really interesting about quantum physics. One of the things that I really, why my book is entirely in yellow, is because I, over the years, both my husband and I have read a lot of really great classic kind of not just self-help, but you know, Napoleon Hill and Dale Carnegie mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. other books in that tradition. And we know that they are just full of really powerful, true concepts. And your book does the same thing, using the situation of the landslide as kind of your, it's like a memoir, but you're using it as an example and then showing us how we can apply the same principles to whatever we might have going on in our own lives. And it's not fluff. It's very solid. And you bring up a lot of really interesting things, like your reference to quantum physics. And I just have to say, on pages 90 to 91, you talk about quantum physics has demonstrated that the creative process has four stages. And you actually go into what those four are as part of quantum physics. That, like, blew my mind. You know? Can you?
Well, it is.
Yeah.
Can you
tell us, you use the term deliberate creative process throughout the book. Can you tell us what does that mean? What is the deliberate creative process?
Well, it's very much what I describe in that four stages of quantum creativity, which is that you come up with an idea and you pull together all of the resources that you have available to you at that moment. You may not know all things about what you're trying to create, but you have come up with an idea because you know something, and you begin to ruminate on that. And when you've reached a point where you no longer know enough, you hand it off to your subconscious mind. And this is based on a very simple concept of the mind, which is that we have a conscious mind and a subconscious mind. And the subconscious mind is actually much larger. It's the non-conscious. It's the part of us that it runs our body and we don't even know what it's doing. It's our self-protection mechanism. And it's also the place from which we access almost everything in the universe, the field of all possibilities. And so at some point when we sort of get stuck and we don't know what to do, we turn all of that over to the subconscious mind. And it goes out and does this incredible research project. When you talk about the search engine, Google didn't make that up. It was actually taking the very concept of what the subconscious mind does to go out and scan everything in the universe for an answer to the question we put out there. Mm-hmm. And then you're sitting and you go play golf, or you go run, or you go play the piano, or you take a walk by the beach. You let it go. And then suddenly you drive past something and you go, oh, that's what I need. And in this wonderful aha moment, it comes into your consciousness and you have a very clear idea of exactly what it is that you need to do. And you begin to go through the process again. That's the deliberate creative process.
Now, another thing that you talk about is the difference between an affirmation and an affirmation. And I'm yes. not saying the words exactly correctly, but they are a little bit different. Most of us are familiar with an affirmation. What's the difference between the two, and how do we use them?
An affirmation is something most people are fairly familiar with. It's a positive statement. And it's used, I am, saying things like, I am wealthy, I have everything I need in life, I feel good about life, I have solved all my problems. They're positive statements for things we may not have yet. We say we're wealthy, we say we're happy, we say we are any number of things, but we may have a way to go before that's actually physically in our life. Those affirmations, though, are positive statements, and they help to reinforce what it is we want. The catch in affirmations is that when you say them, there's probably about 20% of the population who get this terrible rot gut instinct in their belly that says, I'm telling a lie. That's not true. I don't have those things. And when you get into that, when you have that kind of an experience, you don't believe your very own affirmations. And you stop. You can't go forward. And what happens with affirmations, they were discovered by a man named Noah St. John in a shower. And he suddenly had one of those epiphanies I was talking about.
Yes, that's where they often happen.
And he had that epiphany, and he realized that we think in questions. We ask ourselves questions all the time. And he began to play with that, and he realized that if you asked positive why questions, you could trigger your self-conscious to go out and find the solutions that you need. And so instead of saying, I am happy, you ask, why am I happy? Why am I blessed? Why do I meet the people I need to meet today? Why do I find solutions that I haven't had before? And you begin to craft them by looking at what's not going so well, how it would be better, and if you did it a different way, and then craft the why question about how you can get to that better way. That's an affirmation. And it is, wonderful reason, it takes the stigma of, the question takes the stigma out of the declaration, and your mind can begin to answer it. And the only caution is that you must ask a positive question, because the subconscious mind will answer in whatever way you ask the question. It answers in kind. So if you ask, why am I so stupid? Why am I such an idiot? Why can't
questions
I ever
I ask
learn
myself
here?
All the time.
Yeah.
That's the answer you get. Why am I so stupid?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
That's a really good point. Yeah, that's a really good point. You also encourage us to lighten our spirit. What happens when we do that?
Well, the subconscious mind loves to play. It's very lighthearted, and it's joyful, and it's loving. And so when we can find the things that lighten our spirit, we're more in tune, we're more aligned to our subconscious mind. And you just feel better. Just in general, you feel much better. And so you have, I found I would make a conscious effort when I was going through a very difficult part of this journey. I would make a genuine effort to figure out what it would take, what would be the one thing that would make me feel better, and focus on what I could do to do that. And that triggered all sorts of wonderful responses coming to me, much like asking the questions.
Do you have a question, Jim?
I'm just sitting here. I'm in awe.
It's a really good book.
It's like I'm sitting here listening to my shrink. Well, and coming up with 152 different ways of calling me an idiot and then me responding. Yeah, I actually do. When you're sitting down to write this book, Susan, and I know it probably took you more than 12, 16 hours.
Yes, it did.
Yeah, I'm sure it did. What was the process you went through when you went through? Because there's an awful lot of information in this book, an awful lot. And I noticed that you do take excerpts from other writers that seem to know what they're doing. And you certainly seem to know what you were talking about, and I found nothing to say that you didn't, and I believe that you do, but this book had to have been hard to write.
Interestingly, it was hard in a funny kind of way. My process is very much one of meditating and journaling in the morning. I always write in the morning because I'm at my most creative at that point. And I do it before all the hustle and bustle of the day gets in the way. If I wait too long, I just won't have the same reaction or the same flow of words that I do first thing in the morning. So I found that what I would do is I had an outline. I started with an outline of what I knew this process was that I wanted to write about. I knew that I wanted to be able to tell people the step-by-step, you know, unfolding that you could take to get what you wanted out of life.
Mm-hmm.
I had it down on a, you know, one piece of paper. And then I would start to write the first chapter. And it was one thing. And then I would come to a chapter where I really didn't know the answer. I didn't know enough to write it. And then I would go back and I would do the research. And I would research until I had that epiphany again. And it did take a couple of years to go through that entire process and write the book. It was, I don't call it writer's block, but I sort of call it an inspiration. It's sort of like a gap in my knowing, so that I would have to do all that work, that inner work and the research work to be guided to move to the next step.
Well, you know, it's interesting you brought up writer's block, because that's a question we ask all our authors, because this, of course, is the writer's block. And so we ask all our authors, have you ever had writer's block? And we didn't even have to ask you. You just threw it out there. It's an informational gap.
She
okay.
She just wove that right in there.
You did. Well done. I think your husband prompted you.
I mean, writer's block is, you know, we think of it as this terrible experience. You know, oh, I can't think. I don't know what to do. I'm supposed to get this chapter done or this page done. And I see it sort of, in reverse, that it is a tremendous opportunity for you to go inside and find out what's missing. To take that time, I also write about the inner game and the outer game when I'm
right.
In the book, and that outer game is the stuff you do out of routine. Come up with an idea and you figure out what you're going to do and you take some steps of action, and then you look at the results and see if you got what you wanted. But with the inner game, again, it's getting in alignment with your subconscious mind, developing a relationship with your subconscious mind so that you are really intuitive at that point, and you do get guidance. And sometimes that may take a while, but because you're in that space and connected with your subconscious mind, it doesn't feel so much like a block as it is an opportunity.
Uh-huh.
Now, some of our authors talk about, you know, they might belong to a writer's group and they present their material, or they have a great sounding board or a critic, you know, not critic, but a sounding board that reads their material and gives them feedback and such. As you went through this process, it sounded like you worked with some almost mastermind kind of groups. And others that were also working, you actually had one mentor that said one of the things you should do is write a book. I sort of said that to your group.
That's correct. That is correct. That was one of my coaching. That's actually Bob Proctor. Okay. And Bob is sort of the coach's coach. And he definitely felt that when you're trying to establish credibility and have people come on board with what you're trying to do, in whether you're coaching or teaching, or if you're trying to become an author and build a platform, you definitely want to have a book in hand. It's sort of a source of instant credibility. And I know you spoke with Peter, and he had that experience too, mm-hmm. where he was, once he had the book written, people thought of him differently.
Mm-hmm.
It was wonderful. So yes, there was that, and certainly the mastermind concept is something right out of Napoleon Hill. You know, it's one of the core principles, and I think it's tremendously important. It's important for accountability, so that you feel a little bit like you really do need to accomplish something before you get together with your friends. It's good for having what Noah St. John would call a loving mirror, someone who holds you and supports you and believes in you before you believe in yourself. And so there's tremendous value in interacting with people in that way. And as well as the more practical kind of relationships, like working with another writer or an editor to help you craft and finesse the writing that you do.
Mm-hmm.
It appeared that along the way you have been blessed with a variety of support, I'm not sure that groups is quite right, but from the wonderful church community, for instance, that you were a member of, that just got in there right away and helped you with the horses and the packing and moving and, you know, all of that in that day-to-day, and then kind of moving along to others that were being mentored or were working through the life coaching skills that you were trying to achieve. It seemed like you've had this wonderful, you're showing us how important it is to develop outside of ourselves, you know, relationships on all different kind of levels in our life.
Absolutely. I mean, I haven't stopped. It's when I finished the book, and I must say, you know, working with an editor was a fabulous thing, but also very painful. I never knew if I was talking to a man or a woman. They didn't identify. I was working with Balboa Press, and they do not identify who your editor is, so you're sort of working in the blind. But it was after we got done and the book was published, then comes the fun of marketing it and promoting it. And I didn't know what a platform was. I knew nothing about these things. Mm-hmm. And I needed to find that out. And so I found a group that I still am very active with. Deborah Lansky is the leader of it, and it's her business is called Build a Business with Your Book. And she teaches people how to blog and how to do virtual blog tours, how to do podcasts and virtual podcast tours, how to, you know, in essence, you know, understand social media so that you can reach out to the greater, you know, global community, so to speak. And she's, you know, it's because unless you're really published by a big house, you're going to have to foot the bill for all the publicity.
Mm-hmm.
The publicists will be out there and they're going to want their due, you know, they're entitled to it, they work hard. But it's a little bit beyond the normal person's income to pay the kind of money that is charged for publicity. So mm-hmm. It was, you know, I put up my money the first time and I probably did a 6-week. And then I needed to learn how to do it for myself. And so this program I was working with in the group has really helped me tremendously to keep working at it and to learn what I need to do. And that's you know, probably one of the things, you know, you talk about what gems would I leave an author. I'd say learn what a platform is so you know how you have to promote yourself.
Well, and you announced on your blog back in just a couple of weeks ago in January, very exciting news that your publisher, Hay House and Balboa, has chosen Rainbows Over Ruins for inclusion in their Hay House online catalog, which is very exciting.
It's very exciting, and it's a really wonderful opportunity because it's as if Hay House was, you know, on some level picking up some of the cost of publicity by promoting me within the catalog. It's wonderful.
How did you find them? That's one of our questions, you know, so today with self-publishing, you know, all the different ways, and again, so many of our listeners we know are authors. Great advice. How did you find Hay House?
That's a two-tiered question, actually, because the first thing I did was find CreateSpace, which is the Amazon self-publishing wing, and Peter published all his books there,
mm-hmm.
So I was helping him get his books published, so I got to know how it worked, what you had to do, but then what's happening, we didn't have any real help at all. There wasn't a really effective marketing approach through CreateSpace, so I was looking for a company that would have experience with my specific type of book, because this is definitely a self-help book, and it's, you know, it's not something that every publisher would want to publish. And so as I went through that, I discovered that Hay House was, you know, Google searches, I mean, it was that kind of a thing, that Hay House was one of the premier publishers of that kind of content. But I was a little intimidated because they have their, if you go to them and ask them to take your book, you submit it and want them to publish it for you, they send you back a questionnaire, which includes, do you have your platform? What is your platform? And at the time, I didn't know what my platform was. I was like, I'm going to be stopped right there. Mm-hmm. And so I made a decision to self-publish and went a little bit further and discovered that Hay House had its own self-publishing arm, which is Balboa Press.
Ah.
And that was, you know, that was perfect because I could, submit my it's a la carte, and I submitted my manuscript, and then I made the choice to have an editor, and that went back and forth for a while, and you can buy whatever portion of publicity and promotional material you want. And so it was a very nice mix for me in the field where I wanted to be. Mm-hmm. If I wanted to do scientifics, I might go to Wiley. You know, but I had to search for what companies were around.
How interesting.
So what is your platform?
My platform is.
I told you, we always get. Somebody's going to go.
At some point, you know. A platform, you know, for the longest time, I didn't know what it was. And then finally, I got enough information. It's where people find you.
Mm-hmm.
It's like having your office. So my platform is my. I have a website, I have a blog post. I have YouTube. I have, different videos that I've taken in different places are posted up there. I have my social media site, so I'm on LinkedIn and Twitter and Facebook, Instagram, Pinterest, and I have my podcast, which is up there, and I have a list that I'm building where people can go and find out what I'm doing and buy things or order my book or find out where I'm going to appear. Like before coming here, I let people know that I would be on air here through my list and all of those different sites.
And you are live.
Yes, and we appreciated that.
Nationwide.
It was fun reading that today.
Live nationwide, yes.
And you know what, Susan? There's absolutely no shame in shameless self
promoting.
I do it all the time.
And that's, you know, Jim, our host here, his dream for this show was that it be a platform for authors and bloggers and, you know, anybody involved with the written word to have a place to speak, that was very important, that we offer that, because we know you're all looking and searching and trying to figure out how to get out there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a crazy loud world online and everywhere else. And so we're delighted to have this opportunity.
Yeah, that's true. And as well, we have, because it's working so well for us and because this show seems to be getting quite popular, we are actually booked through September.
Yeah, and I was thinking, Jim, that...
Oh, fantastic.
Right.
That the gal that she was talking about with the Build a Better Business with mm-hmm. her book is a guest. If we have one spot left for this year, we should get her.
She has done so many courses. She's currently doing one on how to build online courses. She's been doing this. I will say, I couldn't sing her praises loudly enough, mm-hmm. because she's one of those people who can break down what you need to do into bite-sized pieces so you can take steps.
Yeah,
so I just adore her working with her.
Okay, so we'll get in touch with you to find out how we reach her.
Okay,
so when you write, Susan, or when you were writing this book, or I also know that you do, you've talked about doing journaling and such, where's your favorite place to write? Where do you like to do that?
I'm in a love seat in my family room with my computer in front of me.
So you work on the computer. You're not handwriting mm-hmm. on yellow tablets?
Well, I journal. So uh-huh. there's some cross-pollination that goes on there where I may be journaling about something and find a piece of material that I want to capture and save, and then I'll put it into the computer and let it take me wherever it's going to take me.
Mm-hmm. And that's with the Western Channel playing in the background, right?
Right. It is, actually.
And who?
Yeah,
do you,
I know, Peter.
Who do you have favorite authors? Some of them, which might be along the same material that you write about, but also for fun or not exactly. Like, what are you reading right now?
What am I reading right now?
Or just finished?
just finished. Well, I thought about that. I'm usually reading something philosophical. So it might be, I love David Hawkins' work and Amit Goswami, who's, you know, his most recent book was on quantum creativity, and Rudolf Steiner, who founded the Anthroposophical Society. And then I love Abraham Hicks. The wisdom in the words I find very inspirational. I love the Dorini documents, which is by Catherine Kurtz, and Myths of Avalon. Again, it's all this sort of historical fiction with a little touch of mysticism. And I'm a big fan of Game of Thrones.
Oh.
Big fan.
There's a dichotomy for you.
And I can't even figure it out because it's violent. And it's lusty, and it's totally escapism for me.
Oh, my God.
Myths of Avalon is one of my favorite books. I read that about every 3 years. It's a wonderful book.
Do you really?
Yeah.
It is a great book.
Yeah,
There's no doubt about that.
That and Great Expectations. Those are two of my favorites.
So tell us.
Wow, interesting.
Tell us about the Western town in your backyard.
Yes.
Now, having been there and filmed.
Doesn't everybody have one of those?
Well, having been there and filmed with Peter before, I know about it, but our audience really needs to hear about this town.
Well, he's totally devoted to the Old West. And when we lived in our house that was destroyed by the landslide, he crammed the house with Western stuff. Crammed it. There was not an inch. We had trunks along the walls, and they were stacked, three on top of one another. Our garage was completely filled. The patio was completely filled. We had one bedroom that was not being used for another, another person, so it was completely filled with costume racks. And when the house was destroyed, we rescued all of those things, and eventually, when we found our new place, we wound up buying 5 acres, and we were able, Peter was able to bring mini barns onto the property, and each barn became a home for one kind of thing. So we have a general store, we have a bar, we have an Indian training post, we have a haberdashery, we have a saddle room, and these are all period saddles and period costumes and period military stuff, and he has props galore. He's really, and of course we now had room for our horses, so we brought our horses on, and we have wagons, and both military and freight and surreys, like the doctor wagons. So the whole yard is completely filled, but it's set out like an old Western town.
Okay, so then
named it. He named it Pittsburgh.
We love that.
I love that.
But your name's not in there.
No, and it's okay because I hardly get.
Suesburg doesn't quite make it.
Yeah, her dream is the conference center and the retreat.
That's right. And it's very funny because I thought this would be where my retreat center would be, but as it turned out, the energies between the Wild West and the retreats just weren't simpatico, so I didn't attempt to do it.
Well, you have the hot tub.
Yeah.
Yes, we do. I have a hot tub on my side of the property.
There you go. We're gonna have to leave you here pretty quick. So why don't you tell folks where they can your website and your email and where they can get a hold of you and how they can contact you and your book
and where they and how they can download that wonderful document, the Survivor's Guide, 12 Steps to Inner Peace. Yeah,
that's
actually
a good place to start because the website is simple. It's www.giftfromsusan.com. And once you get there, you can access that document, the Survivor's Guide, which is 12 tips to gain inner peace. And it's also on my main website, which is susanshereko.com. That's SusanShereyko. And there you can have access to my blogs and to my podcast and all the things that I'm actively doing. The podcast is Rebuilding Your Life, Moving from Disaster to Prosperity. And it really is an exploration from finding yourself in the middle of an emergency where you're trying to figure out, what do I take out of the house? And, am I safe? Am I breathing? Am I bleeding? Have I lost consciousness? Basic first aid. And what do you do when you get to the Red Cross Center? As well, moving forward to when you are finally ready to rebuild your life and start to look with intention on what you're going to do in the future.
Well, you have a wonderful comment, and as we say thank you for your time tonight, Susan, here's a thought for today, and this is from your website. Whatever your dreams, remember, live life and feel the way you want to feel right now, not in the distant future. Feel the essence of what you are creating now. You want to hold the feeling with the vision and trust the process. And we thank you for your time with
thank
us tonight.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. I'm happy to do it. It's been a pleasure.
It's been fun. And we will, if you want us to, we will send you a copy of the podcast so you can get it up on your site.
Oh, that would be lovely.
Oh, I'd we would be happy to do that because we actually okay. know your email address.
Yeah.
And I actually know where to find you. So.
That's true. You do.
I do.
Thanks so much for having me. I've had fun tonight.
Oh, it's been great having you, Susan. Thanks for joining us.
Okay.
No, bye-bye.
Good night.
And that was Susan Chirico.
And I've got more chapters to read, and Jim and I have a big calendar we're starting to put out there, you know, where we want to be and what we want to be and work our way backwards. So this is an awesome blueprint.
There are some announcements. We kind of had to leave Susan a little bit early tonight because there are some announcements we need to make. Next week, of course, there is the Out West Concert Series.
Yes.
And in the writer's block will be Jean Charters. I believe she lives in Vermont.
Or how fun.
Someplace out there where she's going to stay up real late.
Yeah, she'll be having hot cocoa or something.
Yeah, Russ will be here with us.
And Russ is great.
Right.
Have a wonderful time.
Russ is great. And the next week is Jack Martin.
Right.
And the following week is going to be a really fun week for us because actually, it's not only are we on with Sam in the morning on Wednesday morning, the 9th at 10 o'clock. So make sure you tune in and hear Bobby Jean and I. We're actually not the host. We just get to sit here and cut up.
We just get to chat.
I know, huh? We really get to chat. But Thursday night is going to be a real fun night, and it's going to be a very first for us because we're going to have two writers on, Ken LaSalle. And one of our very favorite sluts in the whole world, Candace Wade, from the Horse Sluts.
Yes, and she'll be with us live here in the studio.
Oh, my gosh, this is going to be,
she's like
insane.
From Tennessee. She lives in Tennessee, right?
When we had her on last
August,
they were hilarious. Yeah, and she's just a wonderful gal.
That'll be really fun.
And April coming up, exciting news. Of course, the Cowboy Festival is coming up.
Santa Clarita Cowboy Festival.
And the Out West has a building this year again. Same building
like
it had last year.
It looks like it, yes.
And we'll be doing interviews. There's not going to be any merchandise in there this year. It's going to be all
just
writers.
Authors and their books.
In their books. And we'll be doing interviews. And we hope to do a live broadcast from there for an hour, which will be kind of fun. We'll get to pick and choose. And what else?
That's Saturday, March 23rd. April 24th.
Right.
We Out West actually kicks off the Cowboy Festival on Wednesday the 20th with the first kind of community partner event, which is an evening with Sid Masters and the Swing Riders coming in from New Mexico. And then we'll have, again, the Buckaroo Bookshop open on the 24th. 24th and 23rd and 24th.
23rd and 24th, right, Saturday, Sunday.
And also at Out West in front of our storefront, there'll be some other activities going on as well. So you'll want to come into Old Town Newhall and take advantage of attending this amazing annual Western event.
Right. This is your eighth year.
This is our eighth year hosting.
My
the
seventh
Buckaroo
year
Bookshop.
Being there.
Yes.
Yeah, and we'll be there. The Writer's Block will be there, of course, and the Black
Dog
Publishing.
Many of our authors.
Many of our authors will be there.
Dale Jackson and Eric Heisner and Al Bringus and Henry Park will be with us. Margaret Brownlee, Janet Squires.
Janet Squires.
I think just about everybody that we have coming back this year have been guests on the show.
And, Ed Erdelak.
And this year, for the first time, a new author joining us, Bob Brill.
Bob Brill, a radio announcer for 1070.
Yeah.
AM 1070.
And he's got two Western novels out, so it'll be really fun.
Right.
To
JR's reading one right now.
And JR Sanders will be with us, absolutely.
Right. And then really exciting for us, and only because I am a member of the WWA, on the 24th of March, we have Sherry Monahan going to be here. She's the president of the WWA, the Western Writers of America. And it ought to be really nice to sit and talk with Sherry. Of course, she's another East Coaster. She has to stay up real late. She's already complaining.
And we won't be with you because we'll be with our night with Mike Beck, who's a phenomenal Western performer. But that's going to be a really special evening.
Yes. And we'll have Russ here with that.
And you'll have Russ here. Absolutely.
And Susan, if you're still listening to us, I will be sending a Writer's Block coffee mug out to you. And it'll come, I don't think special delivery, but it'll come out there in the next day or three or four. So with that being said, thank you so much for joining us on the Writer's Block this Thursday. And from all of the crew, the bookie, Bobby Joe, Jim over here, that does a really good job of holding up the headphones, myself and Russ Avison, thanks for listening, and good night.